They won that one with a final score of 11-6. So great job there.
Is college even necessary to get into the NBA at this point?
You got to focus on the game. This is not an easy win.
He's the most hyped up prospect since LeBron James.
This is the Arabian Sports Network's Inside the Playbook here on 91.7 WEEM.
Welcome here to this episode of the Arabian Sports Network Inside the Playbook. I'm your host, Michael Hooker. We have a great episode for you guys, so stay tuned, but let's jump straight into it. Welcome here to this segment of ASN Inside the Playbook. My name is Michael Hooker. I'm joined here with
Liam Davis.
So, Liam, today, our topic, we are recapping March Madness as a whole. Obviously, it is already wrapped up. Florida was crowned as the national champions this year over Houston. Very good national championship game, but we will get into that later on in the segment. We're going to start off with the first round. Now, I went through and picked, we went through and picked the top five games from each round. Then we put their leading scores for both teams and the reason for the pick. Obviously, once you get to like the Elite Eight and so on, it goes from five down to like one.
Yeah.
So, first round recap. Number one, Creighton and Louisville. Final was 68-65. That is definitely not the right score, but it was Creighton. Louisville was the number one, probably the best game of the opening round and the opening game. Pretty good showing. I will say that.
Yeah. Great way to start out March Madness. I'll get into the point scores. Starting out with Louisville, Chucky Hepburn, 22 points on 9-for-23 of shooting.
9-for-23.
2-for-8 from three with 6 assists.
Yeah.
Terrence Edwards Jr., also on Louisville, had 21 points on 9-for-22 of shooting. They shot over 60% of their team shots.
And they made 18 of them.
They made 18 out of 45. Terrence Edwards went 3-for-9 from three. So combined 5-for-17. Yeah, 5-for-17. He finished with 4 rebounds and 3 assists. And now going on to the Creighton side, we had Jemiah Neal with 29 points, 11-for-16 on shooting, 2-for-5 from three, 12 rebounds, 6 assists, which double-double. And Steven Ashworth, he's had experience in March Madness as he's 25 years old, still in college. 22 points, 6-for-13 from the field, 4-for-8 from three, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. And then Ry Kalkbrenner, I'm pretty sure he had about like 12 points, but I put him on here because he had 4 blocks on the defensive side.
Yeah, and then next at number two, we put Marquette versus New Mexico. 75-66 was the final. New Mexico pulling that out. Leading scorers was David Joplin for Marquette, 28 points, 9-for-15 from the field, 6-for-10 from behind the arc with 4 rebounds. Then you got Cam Jones as well for Marquette. He was their second leading scorer. 15 points, 6-for-14 from the field, 1-for-4 from three, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. Then you had Donovan Dent for New Mexico, 21 points, 7-for-17 from the field, 0-for-1 from three, 3 rebounds, 6 assists. And then Nelly Jr. Joseph for New Mexico at 19 points, 7-for-10 from the field, 7 rebounds, and 1 assist. We picked that because it was late in the first round, like one game left after them, and it was an upset by New Mexico because Marquette's a very experienced team in March Madness, and they should have won that.
Next one that we picked was number 6 Missouri going up against number 11 Drake. Drake pulled that one out 67-57.
Big upset.
Huge upset that not many people predicted. That's why we put it on here, especially a 10-point win. Starting out on the Missouri side, Caleb Grill with 14 points, 4-for-10 from the field, 1-for-7 from three, 4 rebounds and 4 steals, dominating on the defensive side. Tamara Bates, also for Missouri, 10 points, 3-for-6 from the field, 0-for-1 from three, 1 rebound. Slashing guard, you know, not shooting really a lot of threes. Now we're going over to the Drake side. Bennett Sturts with 21 points, 8-for-11 from the field, 3-for-3 from three, 4 assists. And then Tavion Banks with 15 points, 5-for-11 from the field, 9 rebounds, 3 steals and 3 blocks.
Yeah, it was a great game. Bennett Sturts was on fire.
I know. I mean, he missed 3 shots.
Mm-hmm. All right, next up, Clemson McNeese final 69-67 McNeese. The reason it was an upset, a 12-5 upset, but McNeese was up so much and they almost gave it away to Clemson with the comeback win. Leading scorers for Clemson, Jaden Zachary, 24 points, 9 for 19, 4 for 8 from 3, and then 5 rebounds. Then you had Chase Hunter, 21 points, 5 for 11 from the field, 2 for 7 from 3, 9 rebounds, 9 for 10 on free throws, and 2 steals. Then for McNeese, you had Brandon Murray, 21 points, 10 for 18 from the field, 1 for 2 from 3, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals. And then Kadir Copeland at 16 points, 5 for 8 from the field, 7 rebounds, and 5 assists. And then our last pick of the first round, Liam's team falls to Arkansas and Coach Calipari.
It was heartbreaking.
Kansas, Arkansas. Liam, you can break down the stats.
It was heartbreaking. It was so hard to see my team go down. I was actually on my airplane going home from Florida, and I got off my airplane and I saw the score, and it's heartbreaking. But starting off with Kansas, Zeke Mayo, 18 points, 5 for 8 from the field, 4 for 5 from behind the arc, 6 rebounds, 2 assists. And then you have AJ Storr, 15 points, 4 for the 7 from the field, 2 for 3 from 3, 3 rebounds, 1 block. And then on the Arkansas side, you have Jonas Ido with 22 points, 10 for 19 from the field, 5 rebounds, 3 steals, 3 blocks. Great defensive player, great offensive player. And then Jonnell Davis with 18 points, 5 for 10 from the field, 4 for 9 from 3, and then 3 rebounds.
All right. So that's first round. Second round recap, round of 32. First game, probably the best game of this round, in our opinion.
Some could say of the tournament.
Yeah, honestly. Number 4, Maryland takes down number 12, Colorado State, in a close one, 72-71. The only buzzer beater that I can recall of the tournament, and it was a pretty good one. We're just going to do the leading scorer for both teams. So for Colorado State, it was Nick Clifford, 21 points, 7 for 17 from the field, 0 for 3 from 3, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, and 2 blocks. And then for Maryland, it was the freshman Derek Queen, had 17 points, 7 for 12 from the field, 2 for 3 from behind the arc, 6 rebounds, and 2 blocks.
Derek Queen is going to be great when the future comes. He's only a freshman, and he's been putting up 30 points on any given night.
Yeah.
But going to our number 2 pick, we have St. John's going down to Arkansas.
Probably the best coaching matchup we've ever seen.
Rick Pitino versus
John Calipari.
Yep.
It's hard to do better than that.
Arkansas would go on to win 75-66. Billy Richmond on the Arkansas side, 16 points, 6 for 10 from the field, 9 rebounds. And then going over to St. John's side, we have Zubi Ejiofor with 23 points, 7 for 12 from the field, 12 rebounds, 9 for 11 from the free throw line, and 2 steals. I want to point out a certain player, because I did have St. John's winning it at all, and they were my best bracket up until this moment. RJ Lewis Jr., 9 points, 3 for 17 from the field, 0 for 3 from 3, 7 rebounds, 2 steals.
Mm-hmm. He played terrible.
I had them winning it all. They were so well coached. They had such a good regular season, and then they can't pull it out in the end.
Next up, we have Arizona versus Oregon. Final was 87-83 Arizona. Two very good teams going up against each other. Arizona, I looked at the box score for these teams. Arizona, their shooting splits were crazy. They're very efficient. But getting into the stats, Jackson Shellstad for Oregon led the way, 25 points, 9 for 14 from the field, 3 for 6 from 3. And then for Arizona, you already know who it is. It was Mr. Caleb Love with 29 points, 10 for 18 from the field, 5 for 7 from behind the arc, 9 rebounds, and 4 assists.
And our number 4 pick, Florida taking down UConn by 2 points. UConn falls, going for 3 straight, can't pull it out. Walter Clayton Jr. for Florida, you already know, 23 points, 6 for 14 from the field, 5 for 8 from 3, 3 rebounds. Liam McNeely on the UConn side, 22 points, 6 for 16 from the field, 2 for 8 from 3, 3 assists, 2 steals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just insane. Last pick of the second round, Purdue McNeese, 76-62 Purdue. Runaway. Purdue, runaway. You may be thinking, why put a blowout on here? Because it was supposed to be an upset.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people had McNeese going to the Sweet 16 in this game, and Purdue said, nuh-uh. But we're going to get into this. For McNeese, Sincere Parker, that's a fun name. His name's Sincere. 17 points, 7 for 15 from the field, 2 for 4 from 3. And then for Purdue, Mr. TKR, Trey Kaufman Wren, 22 points, 7 for 12 from the field, 15 rebounds, 3 assists, and a block for Mr. TKR.
Going over to the Sweet 16 round, starting off with the first game, Duke versus Arizona. Duke takes down Arizona 193.
Which is nuts. And I put on there, I titled it The Ending of the Love Affair, because Caleb Love was known as.
And Duke was his main school that he wanted to go to. Duke never offered him. He went to North Carolina.
See, ended.
Caleb Love was undefeated versus Duke going into this game. And he falls by a staggering score, 193.
Mm-hmm.
Cooper Flagg, the freshman player of the year.
National player of the year.
Freshman player of the year. 30 points, 9 for 19 from the field, 3 for 5 from 3. 6 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 blocks, and then just falling short, Caleb Love on the Arizona side, 35 points, 11 for 21 from the field, 5 of 11 from 3, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal.
Yeah, that was nuts. It was such a nuts game. I remember watching it. It was crazy. Next up, Houston, Purdue, final, 62-60. The games were getting a lot closer in this round, except for one. But we'll get into that in a minute. But for Houston, Milos Uzan had 22 points, 8 for 17 from the field, 6 for 9 from 3, 3 rebounds, 6 assists. And then Fletcher Lawyer, 16 points, 6 for 12 from the field, 2 for 7 from 3, 2 rebounds, and 1 assist. That wraps up Houston-Purdue. Probably one of the best games we will see. I'd say it's up there with the Maryland Colorado State game.
So much Purdue fans were so mad at the end of that game.
Yeah, Mr. Whitehair was too. But next up, Texas Tech versus Arkansas. Coach Calipari nearly
almost
taking down Texas Tech.
Texas Tech was a really solid team.
85-83, Texas Tech pulls it out. Christian Anderson led the way, 22 points, 7 for 14 from the field, 3 for 9 from 3, 4 rebounds and 3 assists for the Red Raiders. And then for Arkansas, you had John L. Davis, 30 points. 8 for 22 from the field, 3 for 9 from 3, 11 for 11 at the free throw line, 6 rebounds, and 1 assist.
And now this is probably the highest scoring game we've ever seen.
Of combined score, I think that's what, 201 combined
that's
score?
Something. Alabama versus BYU. Alabama wins 113-88.
Crazy.
You don't see that. You don't see 100 points scored a lot in college basketball, let alone 113. BYU's leading scorer, Richie Saunders, with 25 points, 10 for 14 from the field, 1 for 2 from 3, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 steals. And then Alabama leading the way was Mark Sears with 34 points, 11 for 18 from the field, 10 for 16 from behind the arc.
Crazy.
3 rebounds, 8 assists, 3 steals. And if I'm not mistaken, over 75% of the shots Alabama took was from behind the arc.
Yeah, they had like, I think they broke an NCAA record with 25 made threes as a team, which was crazy.
It was insane.
And then finishing the Sweet 16, Michigan State versus Ole Miss, 73-70, Michigan State. Izzo Spartans pulling it out in a close one. Sean Padula led the way for Ole Miss, 24 points, 9 for 17 from the field, 4 for 9 from 3, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals. And then Jace Richardson, 20 points, 6 for 8 from the field, 4 for 6 from 3, and 6 rebounds. Now we got the Elite Eight. There were 4 games, so we ranked them from best to worst. And best
was number 1 Duke versus number 2 Alabama.
Probably the 2 of the best offensive teams in college basketball
and
duking it out. And
it was so much crazier from Sweet 16 to the Elite Eight for Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Almost a 50-point
drop-off.
Yeah. Con Knipple led the way for Duke with 21 points, 6 for 15 from the field, 2 for 4 from 3, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals. And then you have LeBaron Fillon for Alabama. What a fun name to say. 16 points, 4 for 9 from the field, 3 for 6 from 3, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals.
Yeah, that was crazy.
And then Duke shut down Mark Sears.
And then the next game, which was another number one, number two matchup, Auburn, Michigan State. Auburn wins 70-64. Jani Broome leads the way, 25 points, 10 for 13 from the field, 2 for 2 from 3, 14 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. Then for Michigan State, it was Jackson Kohler with 17 points, 6 for 8 from the field, 3 for 4 from 3, 11 rebounds, 2 assists, and 1 block. Next up, national champs take down Texas Tech, 84-79. Walter Clayton Jr., you already know the story about it, 30 points, came from behind, led the way in scoring. We don't need to break down his stats like that. Yeah. But Darian Williams for Texas Tech had 23 points, 9 for 18 from the field, 3 for 8 from 3, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, and 3 steals.
Next up is another 1-2 matchup. Houston taking down Tennessee 69-50. You know, not really as close as what people expected, but Houston's defense just is crazy. LJ Cryer led the way with Houston for 17 points, 6 for 17 from the field. And then you have Chaz Lanier for Tennessee with 17 points. Only 4 for 18 from the field and 2 for 12 from 3.
Yeah, he did not shoot well from the field, but he had a lot of free throws. I remember that on his box score. Yeah. Final four, Houston-Duke.
First final four with all one seeds in a long time.
Yeah, second one in history. Clutch City returns. Houston wins 70-67. They were down by at least 20 at one point. Cooper Flagg led the way for Duke. No surprise there. 27 points, 8 for 19 from the field, 3 for 4 from 3, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals. LJ Cryer for Houston, 26 points, 8 for 14 from inside the arc, 6 for 9 from 3, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal.
I do want to say one thing about this game. I saw a really crazy stat. Duke scored one field goal
in the last 7 minutes.
Yeah.
It was nuts.
It was like a 17-point ball game with 12 minutes left, and then Houston won a 17-2 run. It's crazy. But then the other Final Four game, Florida-Auburn. Florida pulls away 79-73. Walter Clayton again showing off a masterclass, 34 points, 11 for 18 from the field, 5 for 8 from 3.
Yeah, just doing Walter Clayton things.
And then we had Chad Baker-Mazzara for Auburn having 18.6 for 10 from the field, 4 for 7 from 3, 1 rebound, 4 steals. What a defensive night.
Well, you want to talk about defense. Let's talk about that national championship. Offensively, both teams could not score.
No.
It was not good. And to put it into perspective, Walter Clayton, the past two rounds, had 30-plus points. He was not a leading scorer. He had 9.
Yeah.
Will Richard led the way for Florida in that game where they won. 18 points, 5 for 10 from the field. They did not shoot that well. And then for Houston, it was still LJ Cryer. He shot okay from inside the arc, 6 for 18 with 19 points, but 4 for 11 from 3 from your best player. You can't have that. But that will pretty much wrap up March Madness. This was a bit of a longer segment just because we had so much to break down.
Yeah.
We tried to get through it quickly, but yeah, this is what we're with. We hope you all enjoyed this segment of ASN Inside the Playbook.
Listen to the 80s at 8 to experience the synth sounds and groovy rhythms of the decade. Everything from goth to pop, from Prince all the way to The Cure. We've got you covered every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, only on 91.7 WEEM.
Back to the Arabian Sports Network's Inside the Playbook here on 91.7 WEEM.
We welcome you here to this segment of ASN's Inside the Playbook. I'm Zion Palmieri, joined here with
Lucas Williams,
Mr. Watson.
Now, we're here to talk about Barry Bonds and if he should be in the Hall of Fame. You know, I was trying to come up with topics for our sports podcast, and I thought this would be a really good one because it's a big debate, but really, is it? What do we think?
Well, you know, asking Mr. Whitehair, I asked him what he thought, and he immediately said no. He said because he cheated. So
I guess so. Here, let's take this to something you know a little bit better, right? So let's talk about Tom Brady for just a second. I want to talk about one of the greatest of all time at their sport. If Tom Brady had taken some additive or supplement or a drug that had made him a better quarterback, and this came out right at the end of his career, something like that, would you still deem him as the greatest quarterback of all time? Would you still put him in the Hall of Fame?
I mean, we know what Zion's going to say. I mean,
with the Patriots shirt on, yeah.
Hall of Fame, greatest quarterback of all time, no. Hall of Fame, yes. because no, we're not here to say Barry Bonds the best player of all time. I mean, that's a different conversation, but I think you can't be deemed the greatest of all time if you weren't like fully clean, fully, you have no reason for them not to put you in. You know what I mean?
But you would still, so you put basically being the greatest of all time above the Hall of Fame, which, you know, makes sense, but you think that that means that he should still be let in the Hall of Fame. Why?
Well, I don't know about Hall of Fame. I think I think you cheated the game. At that point you cheated. I think they're very, at least the NFL, I know they're very, it's about integrity. It's about like who you are, not only on the field. They make it a big thing when you get like sworn into Canton and how your legacy is going to be protected forever. And they don't want to protect a legacy that's got a big scratch on it.
So when I asked Mr. Watson, you know, about this whole thing, you asked, you know, what's the point of a Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
And that kind of got me thinking. So I looked up, you know, what is the point of the Baseball Hall of Fame? And in their own words, it says it is to preserve the sport's history, which was the first thing that they said, honor excellence within the game, and make a connection between the generations of people who enjoy baseball. And it's kind of hard to preserve the sport's history without talking about, you know, not just Barry Bonds, but all of those, you know, players from the steroids era. Like, also, as you said, like, greatest of all time, you can debate that all you want, but he should be in the Hall of Fame. Like, I feel like those players, I mean, yeah, they did cheat their way through, but if you want to preserve the sport's history, you kind of can't mention that full decade that, you know, they went through, which is, I mean, a lot of people would say that there was probably their, you know, favorite era to watch.
And you know, like you said, if you cannot tell the story of the game of baseball, which now spans over 170 years officially, then they need to be in. And he needs to be in some way, even if it's just as a contributor, which is a different definition. I don't think you can do the game of baseball and talk about it without talking about Canseco, McGuire, Bonds. And so I think just because of that, with him being a record holder, I think you have to put him in. But if it's just to be honoring great players, then I kind of lean toward what you're saying, Zion, where it's like he cheated the game. But if we're telling the story of baseball as I feel like we should, I think I'd put him in.
That's a really good question. Is there any other players that come to mind, Mr. Watson, that have like kind of missed out in the Hall of Fame or something like that in any sport, really? Because I feel like a lot of guys get popped for PEDs of some kind, and it does nothing to them. They're out for like think of baseball, Fernando Tatis. He got popped for PEDs. He's out for a year. He's back to his normal self.
So they do it differently now because it's easier to track, because it's easier to understand. When a guy's doing something illegal, I think they're able to punish them there. The hard part about Bonds is that you aren't able to punish him. You don't know how far back it goes. And suddenly you run into those issues just as much as you run into the issue of, say that there was a guy who was not an MLB caliber player. He took steroids. Now he's just barely a roster spot, roster scraper. Like, that messes with the whole game as well. Then it's not the best players. It's who can be the best player while also getting this additive.
So, you know, you're talking about when like kind of Barry Bonds, like when he first started taking, like they didn't know exactly when they started. Yeah. They say that it was around the 1998 season, around that. So if you want to kind of break down some of the stats, in those first 13 seasons, he had a batting average of 290, 1,364 runs, 411 home runs, 1,200 RBIs, and over 1,300 stolen bases. And I mean, that's only in the first 13 seasons, and this is supposedly before he all took steroids. Those are pretty phenomenal stats. I mean,
And it kind of makes you wonder, A, is he lying? Which we'll never know now. But if he's not lying, then why did he feel like, did he feel like he had to take it just so that he could extend his career?
Yeah, and that was so, I just don't, why? Why did he take steroids? Because he would have been, if he never did, then there was no quit. We wouldn't be sitting here.
Yeah.
He would 1,000% be in the Hall of Fame, because in those 9 seasons, he did have a better batting average, but of course, I mean, less home runs, less RBIs, less stolen bases.
I think as a player, you do everything you want to do to win a game. Think about like pitchers now. There was that like 2 years ago, like everyone was getting popped for like having spider tack. Would you like pretend Garrett Cole has a Hall of Fame career? Would you take him out because he used spider tack? Everyone's trying to find the best way to almost cheat their competitors, but just find a new edge to the game. And things constantly happen all the time. Now the Yankees have different bats. Maybe, you know, that's a debate. Is that okay? I feel like steroids are a different thing. That's a completely different can of worms. But like everyone, you're a competitor. Everyone finds a way to win. Everyone's gonna bend the rules until they break.
Well, and honestly, so you talk about baseball, right? Since the 1860s, people have been trying to find ways to cheat in baseball to try to get that edge. They'd use scuffed balls. They pay players off from the other team in the Black Sox scandal of 1919. You're trying to find different ways to innovate the game. The Yankees historically have had a short porch in the outfield, so it was easier for their hitters to hit a home run that only goes out in their park. Baseball's always been about finding ways to get around the rules without it coming out. And I think that that's a part of the story too. So I'd lean with you there as well.
You know, something I was kind of wondering is, you know, if you do have Bonds in the Hall of Fame and he did take steroids, does that open up the area, like the gate for, hey, anyone who took steroids can go in? And like, just also, because steroids can, they could really make you that much better. And one of the instances I kind of want to talk about is Rafael Palmeiro, who started taking steroids.
Is that my cousin or something?
Yeah, almost. Didn't start taking steroids until after 1989. And you can kind of tell because in 559 at-bats, he had a total of 8 hits. And after that, in 4 different seasons, he went on to hit 40 home runs.
Yeah.
So, like, even though the steroids didn't make Bonds, you know, that much greater. It's not, even though he did have his single best home run season, which is the best out of anyone, 73 home runs in a season. Other than that, there was nothing like substantially better about him.
It was the longevity. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think kind of to talk to your point there, though, the thing that would become a worry is if we let the whole floodgates open.
Yeah.
Then what are you telling the youth? Are you telling them that, A, if you cheat, but you're really good, then you'll get rewarded? And B, are you encouraging people to then use steroids and hope they don't get caught? That's one area. As the Baseball Hall of Fame is the pinnacle of baseball and its messaging, it's telling the story, are we then promoting that it's okay to try to cheat?
I think it's too late for the MLB now. You know, this has been, there've been a stiff wall for this long. But like, I think that if they could go back, they need to promote being a competitor more. Because like you said, baseball has been about finding a way to win, finding a way to bend the rules until they break. And I think he did that until it broke. But like, maybe they could show that as a competitor. It's way too late now.
Yeah.
He's 60. Like, they're not going to put him in. And then people are going to be like, you know, steroids are the motive now. Because that would shine a bad light.
And they've been leaving people out of the Baseball Hall of Fame since they started it. Shoeless Joe Jackson deserved to be in the Black Sox scandal of 1919. He was the best player in that World Series. He hit so well, but they always are going to say that he got paid off. And then Pete Rose is another one that he says he only bet for his team. He says he only gambled. But the MLB has been all about, the Hall of Fame has always been about just a hard, staunch line against these things, that it's an entitled club. And so maybe that's the reason that they'd probably never let them in.
Well, that'll about wrap it up for this segment. What's the final consensus? Yes or no?
I don't know. The more I've sat here and like thought about it, I was immediately like, yeah, he should be. You know, he's the best. Like, he's one of the best hitters easily. You know, there's no really debating that. But like, I don't know. It really depends on just kind of how you look at the Hall of Fame in general. Like, I don't know. It really depends from person to person, but I don't know.
I'd tell you no. So I feel like right now the player I could compare him to is Judge, right? So if Aaron Judge was found out in 5 years that he had done steroids, I'd be like, no, he's a cheater. I can't believe he did all this and broke Roger Maris's record. So if I'm thinking about it as somebody who wasn't there then, but if it happened now, I'd say no. I think that the game is supposed to be fair. That's one of the reasons we like sports, is because anybody can win. And if we're using something extraneous that somebody else was not allowed access to, that's cheating. And I wouldn't want cheaters to be promoted.
You know, you kind of swayed me there. I was going to tell you that I would have said they can't do it now. Now it's way too late. So no. But back in the day when he retired, I would have said, yeah. But I entirely agree with you there, that you didn't say anything I disagree with. That would leave a huge, open the floodgates.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that'll do it. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Watson.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Stay tuned for more. You're listening to the Arabian Sports Network Inside the Playbook.
Can't make it to the game? Don't worry. The ASN Coaches Show airs every Monday from 5 to 6 p.m.
Welcome here to today's presentation of the ASN Coaches Show.
Hosted by the WEEM sports staff as they talk to athletes and coaches about winter sports and keep you up to date on all things Arabian athletics. Listen today on your Arabian Sports Network, 91.7 WEEM.
Back to the Arabian Sports Network's Inside the Playbook here on 91.7 WEEM.
We welcome you here to this segment of ASN's Inside the Playbook. I'm Zion Palmieri, joined here with
Michael Hooker.
Now, Michael, we're here to talk about the NFL draft. Of course, we're about, I think, 2 weeks out from it at the moment of recording this. So we're going to make some predictions. So starting off, we're going to do probably the top five, about as far as we can get in our 10-minute segment. Mm-hmm. So first off, Tennessee Titans on the board. Who do you have them to take?
I have Mr. Cam Ward from Miami, the quarterback, threw for 4,313 yards, 39 touchdowns on 7 interceptions, which is a 67.2 per completion percentage.
You like Cam Ward? You think he's the best out of him and Shador?
Well, I think he's older. Mm-hmm. He's more matured. I think if you want a quarterback that you can just plug in right away, I think he's your best bet. And if you're Tennessee, you want to go with that. I mean, you can't stick with Mr. Clip Farm forever.
In my opinion, the 1 and 2, I think, are pretty, like, locked down. Like, you know, there's two quarterbacks high on this board, Shador Sanders with Cam Ward. It depends who the Titans want. That's a, like a franchise decision, right, who they like better.
Right, unless they want to make a blockbuster trade for a quarterback with the number one overall pick. Mm-hmm. And then whoever gets that number one, they'll take Travis Hunter.
No way.
Or they take, like, Abdul Carter.
I kind of have Travis Hunter falling a little bit. We'll get into that. I also pick Cam Ward. I think he's the better quarterback out of Shador Sanders. Right. I don't like anyone from Colorado. I was a Patriots fan. They got the 4th pick. I don't want them to trick Travis Hunter. I think he's flashy. I think everyone in Colorado is flashy. Stick to the football. So I like Cam Ward for that reason particularly. I think, you know, Tennessee Titans, they need some edge rushers. I could potentially see them trade down, maybe go for Abdul Carter.
And then who gets number one?
I don't know. So I saw the Giants. They have the 3rd overall pick. I could see that. I could see him taking Kayvon Thibodeaux going up, because from what I hear, Kayvon Thibodeaux is probably not going to stay a Giant. And they've got Brian Burns.
I don't know. This draft class is so bad.
Yeah. It's like not good. Like, but it's
last
not bad.
Last year you had 8 quarterbacks or some crazy number of quarterbacks go in the first round, which was nuts. Picks 1 through 3 were QBs. You know, you drafted one this year.
Yeah. Who are all those quarterbacks? I mean, there's so many. Like
Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr.
Outside of Cam Ward and Shador Sanders, who is there? Jackson Dart. He's not going in the first round.
There's Jackson Dart. There's Jalen Milroe, who I think will probably be the 3rd best quarterback out of this class.
Yeah. I was surprised.
Just because of his
far down
his physical abilities and his deep ball is so pristine. The problem is his accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
But you can work with that.
We'll move to the 2nd pick. You have a blockbuster trade. Talk about that.
So I have. And I actually, it makes sense if you think about it. Cleveland is so messed up.
Resume with Cleveland.
Okay. Cleveland is in such bad salary cap purgatory that they will have to dump some things. And I think Vegas will be like, hey, give us your number 2 pick and give us a couple players with big contracts that you don't want. We'll take it on for your number 2 pick as well. And we'll give you this, this, and this. How's that?
I could see it happening.
They take Travis Hunter.
You haven't taken Travis Hunter?
Because, listen, they got Geno Smith. They just picked up Geno Smith in the offseason. They don't have a good enough wide receiver, one. Their run game sucks, too. So I could see them taking Ashton Jeanty there if they trade up, too. But I think they go Travis Hunter.
Jacoby Myers can be a wide receiver, one.
You wish he turned out to be one.
He's good. I don't think he's probably wide receiver 2 at his peak potential. So a Travis Hunter there would help.
Yeah, it's just Hunter's problem is he's kind of undersized.
Mm-hmm.
He's light.
Do you think Travis Hunter plays both sides of the ball at a professional level?
Yes, but not to the degree he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
I think he will be one of those guys where he either strictly plays a ton of receiver and not a lot of corner reps, or what will be better for him is he plays a lot of corner reps and then he comes in like goal line for wide receiver reps. And because he's a really good route runner. Like if you watch his tape, he's a very good route runner. He's very smart, knows how to read a DB, and he's quick. So he could be a very good goal line receiver.
I think he will. But only like I kind of hope when he gets like drafted, the GM sits down with him and saying like, or the head coach is like, you're playing DB or you're playing wide receiver, and then we'll throw you on the other side. We went like very when rarely. Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. Goal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good idea. There's so many things can happen. And when you open the can of worms for trade, it's hard to speculate. But I mean, the Raiders had the 6th pick. They're going up to the 2nd.
I could see them doing a pick swap, taking some players.
Yeah, next I got the Browns, of course, for the 2nd pick, and I have them taking Shedeur Sanders. I mean, they need a quarterback. Deshaun Watson, not going to be there for very long. They're just kind of holding them for money reasons, I think, at this point.
Yeah, because they don't want to give him the dead cap.
Yeah. Easy pick there. All right, number 3, New York. Who do you got?
Shedeur Sanders. Mm-hmm. He would thrive in that big market.
Mm-hmm.
He would really thrive there. That's where he needs to go. I think for his sake and for who he is, he needs to go to New York. The only issue with that is they have Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, and Tommy DeVito now.
Yeah, they're idiots.
They have a very crowded room, but they were smart with that, if I'm going to say, because if they don't get Shedeur, they're falling back on, okay, I have 2 vets now to build up DeVito. And then Malik Nabers will see a lot of accurate balls because they're older and they're more accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So that develops Malik Nabers' ability. And you could get an all-pro level receiver out of him that we've already seen.
Yeah, I hate the Giants. They're in such a weird spot.
Yeah,
I mean, because you stack your QB room and then... Okay, so it's good because if you do draft that guy, Shedeur Sanders or, you know, Cam Ward, whoever it may be, I don't think Cam Ward's falling that far.
He's getting a lot of info from veterans.
Yeah, that's right. Russell Wilson was like, I don't know, an MVP caliber quarterback. I don't know if he ended up winning it. Jameis Winston threw 50 touchdowns in a season 1 year. So many of these guys are very smart and they know ball. But now he's going to probably have to sit for a while, and you want him to build a relationship with Malik Nabers as fast as possible. So if you can build that guy to sit there, he wasted a lot of money in quarterbacks, but maybe it's worth it in the long run. Well, I don't know.
Prime example, Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
They have gone the past 30, 40 years with having great quarterback play because they had Brett Favre. They brought him in, said, hey, you're going to be our starter. They draft Aaron Rodgers when Favre was getting towards the end of his run there with Green Bay. Have Rodgers develop underneath Favre. Rodgers becomes a five-time league MVP, breaking records, wins him a Super Bowl. So he's your starter. Mm-hmm. Then towards his end of the stint with Green Bay, what do? They draft Jordan Love. He sits behind Rodgers, develops. Guess what? He's playing at a great level. They won 11. They win 11 games. 10 games plus the past few years. He's one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL. The Giants could start a situation with that with Shedeur, have him sit behind him because he's still kind of young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Giants, I have him taking Mason Graham. This is a little bit of a weirder one. My top 5 is a little weird. I think, you know, the 2 quarterbacks off the board, they need D-line, O-line. Just get the big guy in Mason Graham from Michigan. Very good player for Michigan. He will be probably like top 15, I'd say, but I have this one a little early. I could see him, like I said earlier, like pairing this pick with a late pick and maybe Kayvon Thibodeau, because I heard he's probably on the move on getting up to a higher pick. Maybe they just slide down. I don't know. Weird for the Giants. They're either going all in or they're just getting a small piece in offensive line or something like that. Next, New England, who do you got?
You guys need O-line help, so I went Will Campbell, O-tackle out of LSU.
Smart play for me.
I don't think you disagree with that.
Yeah, for me, it was between Will Campbell. A lot of people like Abdul Carter because of the edge threat. Did you hear Abdul Carter say he's like, I can be a number 1 overall pick?
He, in theory, he could.
Yeah.
In theory, he could.
It's not
happening. He is good enough for it.
It's not happening.
He's the next Micah Parsons.
Yeah.
And Micah Parsons still plays.
Yeah. Abdul Carter, I like him. I think the Patriots need that edge on their defense. They've got a very good defense now as it is. The only thing they need is that pass rush, and he will provide that. Travis Hunter, people have him. People have the Patriots taken around there. Like I said before, I don't want Travis Hunter. I think he's a little flashy. I don't want that, like, which side of the ball is he going to play on? I don't want to have that discussion. Just shut it down. We've got good corners as it is. If we want a corner, slide back, take Will Johnson.
Right.
You could go receiver. How do you say that receiver's name out of Arizona?
Tetuaro McMillan.
Tetuaro. He's okay. I don't know much about the guy. So he's predicted later.
Like 6'4", 6'5". Mm-hmm. He's like Mike Evans. Deep threat, big guy, can win on the outside. But his thing is, and the question mark with him is, if a team drafts him not to be as an outside, can he play that inside role? And I don't know. But, I mean, he had a good year, 1,300 yards on 84 catches, which is 12 less catches than Travis Hunter and put up more yards, but had 7 less touchdowns with 8 to Hunter's 15.
As a Patriots fan, I wouldn't hate a receiver at all. I don't know. I kind of want an O-lineman. I don't know.
Yeah, Tet McMillan for Jacksonville. I think it makes sense. They need receivers. They need another young receiver to pair up with Brian Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, I have on my board, Travis Hunter was kind of the one left, and Jacksonville needs a DB, so I picked that. We're running out of time here slowly, so quickly, you are a Colts fan. Who do you think the Colts are going to take?
I want Tyler Warren. If we do not draft him, I will throw a fit.
Okay.
Have you seen this man's stat line?
I've heard he's very good.
1,200 yards on 104 catches, 8 touchdowns, 26 carries for 218, and 4 rushing touchdowns, and 35 passing yards for a touchdown. He's thrown 4 passes and completed 2 of them.
What about Jeanty?
No.
Mr. Watson, friend of the show and the station. He said they should take Jeanty, and then he named another running back in like round 3, and they should run the wishbone.
Amarian Hampton. He wants Amarian Hampton and Ashton Jeanty in the backfield with Jonathan Taylor. Honestly, we could probably run the wishbone.
It would be fun. It would be fun.
Could you imagine you turn on Sunday night primetime and you just see a 6'5 quarterback that's as much as a linebacker running 90 yards down the field? Or then you have Jonathan Taylor and Jeanty and Amarian Hampton in that wishbone.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine that?
That would be a fun sight.
No, I'd put Quentin Nelson at fullback. Put our all-pro left guard at fullback.
Well, I think our top 5 is pretty good. We're going to come back. We're going to see who picked who and kind of like review our picks. So do you think you're pretty accurate with it?
I'd say so.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up.
What do I know?
What do you know? What do I know?
Exactly. What do any of us know?
Exactly. That'll wrap it up. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to ASN's Inside the Playbook.
Well, that is going to do it for today's episode. We hope you all enjoyed this episode of the Arabian Sports Network Inside the Playbook. Check back in a couple weeks from now for our next episode. But you guys just heard the Arabian Sports Network's Inside the Playbook.
Thank you for tuning in to the Arabian Sports Network's Inside the Playbook here on 91.7 WEEM.